everyone. Thanks for joining us in this remote location at this early hour. So this research was begun while I was a doctoral candidate at University of Massachusetts Medical School, and I'd like to acknowledge my co-author, Arlene Ash, who's here in the room. Thank you, Arlene. I have no financial relationships to disclose. So the emergency department is an appropriate place for care for traumas and other emergencies. But as we've seen from other research presented already today, about half of ED visits are potentially avoidable, either non-emergent, primary care treatable, or preventable, avoidable in terms of things like asthma exacerbations. And so the ED is often a place where patients end up also because they lack access to primary care. And that's a quality and cost issue. It's a quality issue because care in the ED is often uncoordinated. There's not much communication between EDs and PCP offices. Often lacks follow-up. So often patients may receive unnecessary procedures and tests. And it's also expensive. It's 3 to 7 times more expensive to treat something in the ED than in a less acute setting, the same condition. And that led to the New England Healthcare Institute to declare in 2010 that we could save $38 billion a year by reducing potentially avoidable ED use. But utilization is increasing, as we've seen already. From 1999 to 2009, ED use increased 32%, and 90% of hospital EDs report that overcrowding is a serious problem. The Institute of Medicine declared in 2007 that ED care in this country is at the breaking point. So the Affordable Care Act is designed to improve insurance coverage for our population, but one of the factors in the ACA is that people are allowed to have a gap in their insurance coverage of up to 3 months without any penalty. And some of my prior research has found that those gaps in insurance coverage are associated with less preventive care utilization. So, in the context of this primary care shortage that we have in this country, we were interested in what are the relevant predictors of ED use and what are the potential impacts of those gaps in insurance coverage on ED use. So we used the nationally representative medical expenditure panel survey, as some of our other presenters have. The sampling frame is drawn from respondents to the National Health Interview Survey. The survey uses an overlapping panel design. We used panel 11, which was from 2006 and 2007. We chose that period because it was pre-reform, except in Massachusetts, which began in 2006, and also pre-recession. We know the recession had a big impact on utilization. The MEPS has a wide range of potential explanatory variables and very good monthly insurance coverage indicators, as well as detailed costs. These indicators and costs and variables are collected in face-to-face interviews, 5 times over a 2-year period, and so the data are quite robust in a lot of ways. There are some limitations. There are only 3-digit ICD-9 or billing codes, disease codes, in the data. So using the NYU ED algorithm that people have mentioned, can't really use that with the MEPS data unless you go to one of the research sites. So the public use files only have the 3-digit ICD-9 code. So we focused on overall ED use, not the potentially avoidable or non-urgent ED use. Modest sample sizes, and also we know that ED use is underreported in MEPS. So correlates related to ED use that's not reported, we weren't able to observe in this sample. We selected respondents aged 18 to 64 at baseline, and that's really the policy-relevant population for the ACA rollout because people over 65 typically have Medicare, people under 18 typically covered under other mechanisms already. We required that respondents have data from all 5 rounds because we used the base year 2006 to predict utilization in the prediction year 2007. The framework for selecting our criteria or our variables was Anderson's behavioral model of health services use, including the predisposing, enabling, and need factors. Many of our predictive variables were only recorded at baseline, but we also had some longitudinal predictors, such as income, which varied over the 2 years. We categorized people in 3 groups based on their whether they were high income, if they were higher income, they were higher income in all five rounds. Middle income, they were either middle or high in five rounds, and then low income, they were low or middle in all five rounds. Employment and insurance also were time-varying characteristics. The insurance groups, we characterized people as having continuous private coverage only, no public coverage at all, continuous public coverage with or without private as well. Intermittent coverage was the group that had any gap in their insurance coverage of 1 month or more, and continuously uninsured were the people who had no insurance the entire two-year period. So here we have the descriptive characteristics. We had about 9,000 people in the sample. Weighted, that represents about 179 million. Again, it was an 18 to 64 age range group. You can see the other characteristics there, but I want to point out the income groups were fairly balanced, about a third in each. Job status, 70% were continuously unemployed, and 20% had periods of unemployment, and then 11% were continuously unemployed. That included homemakers and students and a few retirees. And then the continuous private insurance group, a little less than half of the sample, 13% had continuous public insurance with or without private as well, and then intermittently insured was 22%. 18% had no insurance the entire two-year period. So here we have the ED use and costs by insurance status. So the first column shows overall our 9,000 people in our sample, and then the four insurance groups. In 2006, overall, the ED visit rate was a little less than 14% had any ED visit, higher in the any public group, and also higher in the intermittent group. The number of ED visits followed the same pattern, with higher numbers of ED visits per 100 in the public group and the intermittent group. The ED expenditures among those with an ED visit, the mean was about 1,000, a little higher in the private group. And the expenditures here we're talking about are payments, not charges. So this is, includes both out-of-pocket and what the insurers actually paid out for the visits, and that's, those are weighted. As our first presenter showed, in 2007, utilization decreased a little bit. So over the whole period from 1999 to 2009, ED utilization went up, but there was a little bit of a dip in 2007. And we saw the same, but we did see the same patterns in terms of by insurance groups, in terms of ED visit rate and number of ED visits and expenditures. So here we have the results of our logistic regression model. What we see here are the odds ratios and 95% confidence intervals. The black diamonds represent the reference categories within each of the categorical variables. The red diamonds are the significant predictors, and the blue diamonds are the insignificant, non-significant predictors. I'm going to focus only on the significant predictors of ED use. These are predictors of any ED use, again, using characteristics from 2006 to predict use in 2007. So in the insurance for the insurance categorical variable, relative to having continuous private coverage, people with public insurance continuously had elevated risk, but the 1.41 was the odds ratio for having any gap in insurance. So we already knew this, that public insurance was associated with an increased risk. The second bit is new. Men were at decreased risk of going to the ED relative to women. People with limited English proficiency were at decreased risk of going to the ED relative to those with English proficiency. And I would hypothesize that this is related to the healthy immigrant effect, which some of you may have heard of before, the idea that people who immigrate are healthier than people who don't. Education, relative to people with a college degree, people with less than a high school education were at elevated risk of going to the ED. Both low income and middle income were associated with higher risk of going to the ED. Having delayed care or being unable to access care was associated with an increased risk. Prior behavior predicts future behavior, as you might expect. Every additional ED visit in 2006 increased your odds of going to the ED the next year by 1.6. And finally, any cognitive or physical limitations were strongly associated with risk of going to the ED, even adjusting for all the other factors. Okay, so what we now know is that both gaps in insurance coverage and continuous public coverage are associated with greater risk of going to the ED than having continuous private coverage. The reason this is important in context with the ACA is that the ACA is increasing Medicaid enrollment and private enrollment, but for a lot of the newly insured, maintaining that coverage may be very difficult, especially navigating these systems that often have problems, dealing with the burden of paperwork and verification on your income and this kind of thing. The newly insured may have difficulty holding on to that. Especially in context with the continuing ongoing primary care shortage that we face in this country, my research suggests that we are going to continue to see unsustainable growth in national EDs.